son. I'll tell you, life
is. And
then I was out of town the week before and couldn't do it. And I apologize if you hear some noise in the background. I got into my office so I could do the call and have a good phone line to you. And they have a machine grinding up trees outside of my window. So if you hear it, I apologize, sir.
Okay, well, at least we know that it's not something that's coming to get you in the building. You know,
when I drove up this morning, I thought of the movie Fargo. Remember how they use the tree grinder?
Legs sticking out.
And yeah, sorry. I should not say that. I know you love movies. I couldn't help myself.
Oh, Fargo's one of my favorites. Okay, here's what you've got for notes, and it's been a while. So, boy, I've been reading a lot about the changing real estate. For one thing, I'm just going to throw this out. It's not in your notes, but the idea that interest rates are definitely rising for mortgages. They're saying they've gone up quite well, when I say quite a bit, there's been a significant rise again in both the 15 and 30 mortgage rates within the past month, right?
That's right. Well, let's talk specifics.
Okay.
Late December, you and I were talking about how current rates were for the 30-year mortgages around 3.9%.
Yep.
We were saying we thought they would go up to 4.4 or 4.5% by the end of 2018.
Oh.
Well, in reality, in the first 2 months of the year, they went from 3.9 to about 4.4.
Wow.
So average 30-year fixed rates last Friday were probably 4.375. So there's been a big, big shift. Now, that does not mean, Larry, that those shifts up are permanent.
No.
They could bounce back down just a little bit. But when you have fears of inflation, and not over inflation, but when you have people who start thinking, hey, the rate of inflation is going to go up, you're going to see an increase in mortgage rates, and there's just about no way to stop it.
Well, talk to us just a little, just a quick course in how we recognize that inflation is, that basically means the price of things is getting more. Am I right on that? That's right.
So if you asked me, Cleve, what would you do to determine whether or not we were in an inflationary period, I would look at the Consumer Price Index, the CPI.
Uh-huh.
You see it, you hear it on the news, you see it in the newspaper all the time, the CPI. And for the last few years, it's been about 1.5%. The CPI has been about 1.5%, meaning we've got inflation of about 1.5% in consumer pricing on everything, all the goods that we buy in the last year, and they're projecting it'll go to about 2.5%. But what really happens is as the price of everything starts to rise a little bit faster, then investors demand more of a return for their money. So when they invest in 10-year treasury bonds or 20 or 30-year treasury bonds, they require a higher yield interest rate. And when they require a higher yield, the only way people who are selling these mortgage-backed securities, which they take your loan and my loan and everybody else's loan, and they put them all together and basically sell off little pieces of the income stream to investors all over the world in mortgage-backed securities, they require a higher rate. When they require a higher rate, now the ultimate buyer has to pay a higher rate. So that's how it happens.
Yeah. And that, of course, affects the real estate market because the price of housing rises with inflation as well. Of course, we saw that big time in the 8-year stretch where where things got totally out of hand. And of course, we know what happened. We're still recovering from that. But right now, what does the residential real estate market update look like for January?
Well, so in terms of the detached closings, now that's not the condos and townhomes, almost 4,000 of those closed for the month, Larry, which is a decrease of 1% over January last year. The condos and townhomes, just a little under 900 of those closed. Now this is just for the month, which is an increase of 6% over the prior January. So it looks like kind of balanced, down a little bit in the detached units, up a little bit in the attached units. Now from a sales price standpoint, the detached units, again, not condos and townhomes, average sales price $283,000, which was 7.8% higher than January of 2017. The condos and townhomes, and Larry, when I give you these numbers, it really sort of blows my mind because I can remember within the last 7 years, Larry, that the average sales price of a condo and townhome in Atlanta was closer to $120,000.
Yeah.
In January, $249,000 was the average sales price of a condo or a townhome. That's up 5.7% over January of 2017. Now, those have flipped. Normally, for the last couple of years, the condos and townhomes were appreciating a little faster, or pricing was moving forward a little faster. The detached homes, pricing was moving forward a little more slowly, but that has reversed itself in January. I don't know that that certainly will make a trend. It could be just an anomaly. Now, the big deal, though, is the lack of inventory. In January of 2018, there were 26% less, Larry, single-family detached homes available for sale in the metro Atlanta market. 26% less.
And that's, of course, that you can just, it doesn't take a genius to think that that basically translates into the prices going higher on those condos and townhomes.
That's exactly right. Well, let's look at that condo townhome number. That those that inventory was not down 26%, but that inventory was down 17%. Mm. So that's a big deal as well. And so when you have less inventory, then you have less supply than you have demand. You have less homes on the market for sale than you have buyers who want to buy those homes. I mean, economics tells you that you will have the prices continue to increase over time. So you're exactly right. And then, Larry, it took, in January, an average of 71 days from the day a property was listed for sale to the day it went under contract with the buyer who later closed for it to go under contract, 71 days. And then in the condos and the townhomes, it took 54 days from the date it was listed to the date it went under contract with the buyer who closed.
We're talking with Cleve Gaddis, King of Atlanta Real Estate. And Cleve, now might be a good time to let people know where they can contact you if they're buying or selling a home here in Atlanta.
I'd love it. I'm Cleve Gaddis with Gaddis Partners REMAX Center. My family's been in the Atlanta real estate business for 31 years, Larry. We're very proud of that. You can reach us at 770-497-0000, or you can visit us online at gogaddis.com. That's G-O-G-A-D-D-I-S.com. I also am the host of the Call Cleve Atlanta Real Estate Show, which can be heard every Tuesday at 2 and then Sunday at noon on News Talk 1160, AM 1690 sister station. So I'll be on today at 2 o'clock. And we always have a solid one-hour show talking about Atlanta real estate, Georgia real estate throughout the country. So we talk about the kind of topics you and I discuss on your show, but we dig a little deeper into them. So I invite you, if you're listening now, to tune in again today at 2, Tuesday at 2, or Sunday at noon on News Talk 1160.
All right, let's move to something here that I'm sure will perk everyone's interest, and that's potential changes to credit scores. What would you like to convey here?
So I got so excited, Larry, because you are, let's see here, to say that you're a bit negative when it comes to credit files and three credit companies controlling all of that data, I think would be an understatement. You don't love that. You think, hey, there's too much control, and there ought to be other ways for us to work that out.
No, my main complaint is, what does it take three of them? You know, it's ridiculous to have to, you know, I've experienced different credit scores from different credit agencies. It's ridiculous that they have that much power over our lives, that they can report whatever they want, and there's three of them, and you never know which one.
So you said you were not negative, but now you're demonstrating that you are negative.
I'm
about
totally
the credit
negative.
Companies. And
I
it's
hate
okay.
Them.
That is no problem. I get that totally. And so when I saw that FICO was coming out with a new version of the FICO score called the FICO 8, or excuse me, the FICO 9, and there's also another company that's coming out with what's called a Vantage score, V-A-N-T-A-G-E score, I thought maybe there's hope for people who are locked out of the market. Because listen, Larry, they say 26 million Americans don't have any credit record at all,
really?
And another 19 million have credit records that are considered unscorable due to insufficient credit history or lack of recent credit history. And so I'm thinking, okay, maybe they're coming out with something that will allow someone who has a limited credit history to get a good credit score in place so they can have the borrowing power of someone who's like me, who's had credit for the last, 30 years.
Sure.
And so I dug into the details, Larry, and it doesn't seem like there's really any other alternative scoring methods or anything like that. It seems like the FICO 9 score and the Vantage score are really designed just to be a little bit more predictive. It sounds like both of them might be a little more forgiving for one-time instances, like somebody gets behind, they have an illness, and they just miss a couple of payments, and they get right back on track immediately. It sounds like that the new scoring models are designed not to penalize them so much. But I only wanted to share this with you because I thought it was so interesting that the credit reporting agencies own, so Experian, TransUnion, Equifax own VantageScore. Okay? So now the credit unions say that monopolies are not good and that FICO has a monopoly on the credit scores, but it's the credit companies, TransUnion, Equifax, Experian, who sell the FICO scores, but they're saying a monopoly of FICO is not good for the market, so they're going to plan an alternative of being the VantageScore, which is also now a scoring model that is owned by the people who own the data and sell the data.
Right. Well, I just got to 848 on the FICO score, and I called, and I'm getting
and
close.
And the highest is 850. You can't get any higher than 850.
I'm getting close. But here's what I wanted to tell you.
Yes.
Because I've locked all my the credit reporting companies.
Me too.
I've locked
Me too.
My account. So, and I don't want to open them. So
yes.
I went to, I was thinking of either trading my car or keeping it. Now, I'm debating what to do with this vehicle I have.
Okay.
So I called my friends at the car company that I do a lot of business with, and I said, listen, I don't really want to unlock, my things, but my FICO score, which I get every month through Bank of America, is 848. And I have it documented right on my phone, right there, here's your FICO score for this month. I said, could you use that so I don't have to unlock my, one of the credit scores? And I don't know which one they use, so I probably have to unlock them all, for the period of time. And they said, no, we can't use that. We have to go to the
that's exactly credit
right. company. So what's the point of having the FICO score, if they can't use it for anything?
So, and remember, the FICO score is just an algorithm that is applied to the data in Equifax or TransUnion or Experian database. So it's just a way of calculating the score. In December, we bought a new car for our business. We're going to wrap a little Kia that's going to be driving all over Atlanta. You'll see my face on the side of it. And so what I did is I just did a temporary unlock. So I went in, and I had my reference numbers, and I went into all three of my credit files, and I unlocked them for 3 days. And then on that fourth day, they locked back automatically. Mm-hmm. And so they were able to go in and get it. And it was actually fairly simple. I did not, let's see here, I think it was Experian that I did not remember the number.
Yeah.
I didn't remember the number, but that didn't keep me from getting the credit for the new car.
Good.
No.
Good. Okay, well, there we went on and on about that. There's been talk about trying to do something with the credit reporting companies, and I hope at some point along the way they find some way to I wouldn't mind if it was combined or something, so it was just one. It's the three scores that just baffle me. The fact that you can you don't know what your credit is going to be depending on where which company is reporting, and that just seems completely ridiculous to me.
And with a mortgage, they're almost always going to pull all three scores. They're going to do a tri-merge score. Now, you could go to a local bank when you're getting a car or something like that, and they might only pull from Equifax here in Atlanta just because that bank has done that for the last 20 years.
Sure.
But, it's like a crapshoot. You never know.
You never know. Let's. We've got just a little time left, but I wanted to get to this because I know a lot of people are kind of scratching their heads about what's going to be deductible and what's not going to be deductible under the new tax laws. You're talking about moving expenses. Wow, that's a big, big number for a lot of people.
So I had not heard anything about moving expenses not being deductible. Now, they're not fully deductible now because you had to move over 50 miles and it had to be, due to a job. And so you have all kinds of requirements, and not every last thing. So like your meals when you're moving are not deductible. No. I don't think your hotel rooms are, but your mileage is, and your, the expense you pay to the moving companies and things like that are. But effective with the new tax law, which I think was either December 14th or 16th of 2017, those expenses are no longer deductible, period. Now, that provision will be sunset in 2025, coming back in 2026. But I'm thinking, hey, that was hidden pretty well. They didn't talk to anybody out there. That was my surprise. My two surprises on things in the tax law that you and I never really discussed in detail, although we have discussed the first one quickly, is that interest you pay on a home equity line of credit, a HELOC, if you will, is no longer deductible unless the money you borrowed was used specifically to improve your home. Used to, you could borrow money on a home equity line of credit, send a kid to college, and you could deduct the interest on that, or buy a car and you could deduct the interest, but you cannot anymore unless you prove you use it to improve your property, and then not being able to deduct some moving expenses. And Larry, I'm sure there are going to be some other surprises that come out on things that we used to be able to deduct, but we can't anymore. And I promise you this, as I find those, I'll bring them to you every Tuesday
to
keep all the listeners
informed. I was going to say, a lot of people just remember this, folks. It doesn't apply to your taxes for last year.
That's
you're filing
right.
Just the way you always have for your income, for all the deductions. They're still in place for this tax filing. So we'll get to this, Cleve, later on in this year. I think as we get, a little further into the year, we can start talking about 2018, because that, of course, is when all this is going to kick in.
Thank you so much for clarifying that, because a lot of people out there are confused, thinking it's going to affect their tax return that they're filing for 2017, but it won't.
Nope, it does not. Yep. Well, that's it. That's all the time we have today, Cleve, and we will talk to you next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday, and I'll be coming to you from Las Vegas next Tuesday.
Ooh.
I'm speaking to a group out there next Tuesday afternoon, so I'll be there, and I'll be up bright and early talking to you on the
telephone. Yeah, you'll be right there at the blackjack table. I know you're going to be down there. Gambling away all your travel money.
I'll be at the MGM Grand. I'm not much of a gambler, but I will play the slot machines just a little bit, I promise.
Okay, he's moving out to Las Vegas.
Bye-bye.
Cleve Gaddis, king of Atlanta real estate.